Hello. Welcome to our program on Curios. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to start today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 24th of April. The title of this article is Jobs and Immigration. What happened? The article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Paul Kiernan and Drew Anfon. More than a year into President Trump's immigration crackdown, there is little evidence out there of widespread disruptions in the labor market or of any meaningful benefits to American workers. Unemployment is up slightly for U.S.-born workers, and wage growth has slowed. Wage growth has also slowed in the blue-collar industries that tend to employ low-skilled migrants, a sign that widely feared labor shortages have not yet materialized, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis of Labor Department figures. The data provide early insight into a question that politicians and policymakers have debated for decades now. What effect do immigrants have on wages in the countries that receive them, and what happens without the newcomers? Some challenges have emerged in key sectors. Home builders in South Texas have raised alarms about construction delays and higher prices after immigration crackdowns spooked workers. Some restaurants say they are having trouble finding enough dishwashers. In an economic report last week, the White House said record flows of illegal immigrants depressed wages for Americans, inflated the demand for housing, and drained the welfare system. So in response to questions from the Journal, White House spokesperson Kush Desai pointed to higher wages after inflation and strong labor force participation among prime age workers as evidence that the administration's policies are working. After 4 years of Biden's inflation crisis and open borders disaster, leaving American workers behind, the data since President Trump took office has been clear, Desai said in an emailed statement. Real wages are finally growing, and more Americans are coming off the sidelines to participate in America's economic resurgence. But industries in which immigrants with low educational attainment are overrepresented have seen slower wage growth than the broader private sector since Trump did take office, a Wall Street Journal analysis shows. If turning off the immigration spigot was going to meaningfully boost wages or spark labor shortages, it should be jumping out at us in the data by now, said Wendy Edelberg, an economist at the Brookings Institution. The effects are not there. Economists believe there are a handful of reasons. Trump rolled out his immigration policies at the same time as global tariffs that economists say ratcheted up uncertainty and slowed hiring. And by ramping up deportations and slowing immigration, the U.S. has lost consumers as well as workers. The immigration downturn and an aging population together have reduced the number of jobs the U.S. economy needs to create to keep unemployment low. Meanwhile, rising productivity per worker has allowed the economy to keep growing with relatively less labor. The data do suggest an economy that readily absorbed millions of immigrants a year after the pandemic is similarly able to adjust to a sharp decline in immigration, said Michael Feroli, J.P. Morgan's chief U.S. economist. Unemployment touched the lowest levels in half a century in 2023, and wages grew at the fastest pace since the early 1980s to keep up with the post-pandemic inflation increase. The White House has pointed to both trucking and construction, industries where hourly earnings were up 3 9% and 4% respectively in the year ended February, as positive examples. But other immigrant-heavy industries such as restaurants, food manufacturing, and services to buildings and dwellings saw slower wage growth. The journal analyzed Labor Department data on wages in dozens of industries. The analysis used 2024 census data to identify fields, including construction, restaurants, food manufacturing, and hotels, that do rely heavily on non-citizens with a high school diploma or less, a common proxy for people who entered the country illegally. The journal excluded industries such as agriculture and the gig economy, for which the Labor Department does not publish hourly earnings. The result? Across 41 industries that rely most heavily on low-skilled immigrants, hourly earnings did rise by a weighted average of 3.5% in February from a year earlier, according to the latest figures. That was less than the 3.8% increase in average hourly earnings for all workers and marked a slowdown from before Trump took office. Employment in those 41 immigrant-dependent industries fell by 90,400 in February from a year earlier, while overall employment grew by 298,000 jobs in the same stretch. Preliminary March figures available for 23 of the sectors show a year-over-year gain of 39,400 jobs. There are idiosyncratic reasons for the modest wage growth in certain immigrant-heavy sectors, such as high interest rates weighing on home construction. Uncertainty around tariffs and artificial intelligence has made some companies wary of hiring. Across the economy, joblessness among U.S.-born workers inched up to 4 3/10% in March from 4 2/10% a year earlier, while unemployment for foreign-born workers went the other way, slipping to 4.3% from 4.4%. Median weekly earnings, another measure of wages collected in a massive monthly census survey of households, grew 3 9% last year among U.S.-born workers, the slowest pace in 4 years. "I thought it would affect us better than it has," said Tyler Dunworth, who supervises a maintenance crew at a university in upstate New York, of the immigration crackdown. He voted for Trump in 2024 and said his union is struggling to negotiate more than a 2 3% annual pay increase. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 23rd of April. The title of this article is "Finally, Good Job News for Grads." This article was written for the journal by Ray A. Smith and Tu-Pen Chen. New signal suggests some big employers are moving to boost entry-level hiring. At long last, the job market appears to be giving the class of 2026 an early graduation present. After years of steady deterioration, there are early signs of entry-level hiring is picking up. A widely watched survey by the National Association of Colleges and Employers out Monday showed that employers expect to boost new graduate hires by 5 6% this spring from a year ago, a turnaround from their much grimmer forecast last fall. Another recent survey by ZipRecruiter found nearly a third of employers plan to hire a greater share of entry-level workers this year than the previous one. Big companies such as McKinsey and International Business Machines say they have also increased graduate hiring this year. Meanwhile, unemployment among 20 to 24-year-olds with bachelor's degree and higher dropped sharply in March to 5.3%, according to an analysis by B of A Global Research published Friday. That was down from a decade high, excluding the pandemic's early months, of 8.9% last fall. Those signals suggest that for now, some employers are feeling the need to replenish their pipelines of entry-level workers after holding back for several seasons. In some cases, artificial intelligence is spurring hires by enabling companies to expand services and product lines, said NACE President Sean Verderziel. It is good news, but it does need to be moderated with the fact that the last 2 years' hiring has been down considerably, Van Derziel said. Graduates say that they also see glimmers of a rebound out there. In a separate ZipRecruiter survey of 1,500 recent graduates released last week, those who said that they landed a role within 3 months of graduation climbed to 77% from 63% last year. Even as competition for entry-level roles intensified, the job site found. Some of the rebound might reflect graduates' willingness to lower their sights, ZipRecruiter economist Nicole Beauchat cautioned. It could be working in a fast food place or driving for DoorDash, she said. Job opportunities for college graduates have sputtered in recent years. Companies, especially in technology, continue to course correct from overhiring during the pandemic. The rise of generative artificial intelligence, which can replicate many basic entry-level tasks, has also stifled hiring. Still, in recent months, he has seen more hiring for jobs in fields such as healthcare and AI-related roles, even as recruitment in human resources and marketing has dropped off. Soon-to-be graduates say it has taken a lot of legwork to land a job offer. Carson McDougall, a senior at High Point University in North Carolina, was feeling anxious when she still hadn't gotten a job by February. By then, the entrepreneurship major had applied for 30 roles and gone through 10 job interviews. Then, last month, she was offered a job as a sales representative with the Charlotte Hornets of the National Basketball Association, where she had been cultivating contacts since her sophomore year. "I was very surprised, very excited, and I was more just relieved," she said. She thinks that the networking made the difference. "I went the extra mile to reach out to someone, whether they were on HR or whether they were the hiring manager," she said. "Just doing something that maybe other candidates that were against me were not doing." Graduates who worked during school landed jobs at twice the rate, 82% of those who did not, 41%, the new ZipRecruiter report found. Giovanni Hodson, a senior at the University of Kentucky, said that internships from his freshman year on helped him secure a spot in Ernst & Young's supply chain and operations division once he graduates. "It's more competitive out there, so you've got to do more and be more well-rounded," the finance and accounting major said. Yet for plenty of other members of the class of 2026, the job market does remain challenging, says Beth Hendler Grunt, founder of Next Great Step, which is a New York metro area career coaching company for college students and recent graduates. "I have highly qualified students out there who have been actively networking, showing their value, following up, and still having a hard time," she said. In the NACE survey, more than half of employers said that they had discussed replacing early career tasks with artificial intelligence. McKinsey, a big recruiter at a number of top colleges, said its entry-level hiring is up this year and is likely to rise again next year, even as artificial intelligence reshapes some of the work its entry-level consultants do. We think that the work is going to continue to be even more important, but the nature of it is going to shift, said Blair Sisel, a McKinsey partner, leading global talent attraction at the firm. IBM, which is tripling U.S. entry-level hiring in 2026, said its junior roles have evolved rapidly, too. The jobs that we had 2 years ago, artificial intelligence can do almost all of it, said Nicole Lamoureux, IBM's chief human resources officer. Now those roles include fewer rote tasks and more work with customers and problem solving. The following article is from the March 2nd issue of the Wall Street Journal. The title of this is The Do's and Don'ts of Using Artificial Intelligence to Write Performance Reviews. This article was written for the journal by Cheryl Winokur Monk. Artificial intelligence tools can be helpful in getting your message across, but they also could backfire. Managers are using artificial intelligence to handle more of their paperwork, and that includes one of the most delicate parts of a boss's job, performance reviews. But doing that can be risky. Yes, artificial intelligence can be useful for a review, such as helping managers express themselves more effectively so that the employees better can understand goals and next steps. But the technology can also make basic factual mistakes in reviews, expose sensitive information, exaggerate praise or criticism, or even come off as generic and impersonal, undermining the boss's relationship with the employee. The tools out there are really effective when they are used to enhance the quality of the process, says Alex Alonso, who is Chief Knowledge Officer of SHRM, formerly the Society for Human Resources Management, an HR lobbying group. But if managers do rely too heavily on AI, he says, there is a danger of playing down or drowning out other legitimate feedback. A recent study of nearly 2,000 members of SHRM found that 13% of organizations are using AI-powered tools in their performance review processes. That figure does not include individuals who may use AI tools without the company's explicit permission. So here are some do's and don'ts to remember when using AI for performance reviews. First, check out what the AI will do. As is well known, AI can screw up even the simplest facts or just hallucinate and invent details. So it pays to check everything. If any of those goofs end up in a performance review, not only will the review be wrong, but it may erode employee trust and get a manager in trouble, said David Wagner, who is founder of Clear Mission Consulting in Portland, Maine. Managers should also watch out for the tone the AI uses. It might make an employee's behavior sound overly positive or more negative than intended, for example. Or the review may just sound generic, which could also harm the employee's morale and relationship with the boss. Employees have a radar for that, says Emily DeJew, who is assistant teaching professor of business management communication at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. One smart strategy here, upload your draft of a review and ask the system then for help improving clarity, making a particular section more succinct or softening the tone, for example. AI is very good at offering suggestions for rewriting content that you've already produced, Wagner says. Give the AI lots of facts to work with. Whenever you ask AI to contribute to a performance review, Please make sure to be specific about the information you want the system to analyze or finesse. Kyle Elliott, who is an executive coach in Santa Barbara, California, has a client who put the company's business goals and the employee's accomplishments into artificial intelligence and asked AI to connect them. How was the employee helping to or failing to advance the goals? But for that strategy to work, Elliott says, you've got to spell out the details of an employee's performance and go into depth on the company's aims. Artificial intelligence needs that information to produce the deepest and most useful answers. AI is not going to know your goals or the business fully. You really have to provide a lot of data and information, Elliott says. As part of that, remember to include information about intangibles, how the employee is regarded by his peers, what attitude he or she brings to the job, how proactive he or she is about handling tasks. Those types of qualities don't necessarily show up in quantitative results that an AI can easily crunch, but they are vital to giving a full and a fair assessment of an employee. Last year, SHRM fielded a question about using artificial intelligence to capture and analyze employees' email correspondence in order to help the company better understand how they can communicate outside of meetings, says Alonso. The society's verdict? Don't do it. Artificial intelligence my way. Email communications too heavily, the pros feared, and lead managers to overlook other aspects of an employee's performance. Use artificial intelligence to practice the human touch. Written performance reviews can be important, but there is often a conversational component to reviews. LLMs, large language models that understand and generate text, can help you hone that as well, says Diju. Several paid platforms have voice-based options that allow the managers to practice delivering feedback to a chatbot as if it were the employee. This allows the managers to get tips on things such as delivery, communication, style, and content. Artificial intelligence can point out whether you're rambling or offering criticism without actionable advice. For example, it makes you aware of things that you might not be aware of yourself, Diju says. Avoid personal or sensitive information. If managers use an external artificial intelligence system instead of one that their company controls, they run the risk of sharing potentially sensitive data outside the company. That information might also be incorporated into an AI's knowledge base, where in theory it could be misused or exposed in a security breach. And so, when working on reviews, avoid sharing overly personal information with the artificial intelligence. Even if you are using an employer's closed system, don't just copy and paste your notes. Employees might see it as a privacy violation if you use information about their health designation, for example, a difficult divorce, or another sensitive matter, Diju says. The same also applies to proprietary company information. Elliott, the executive coach, has a client who entered the name of a confidential vendor into AI, a potential violation of company policy. The client's manager gave him a warning for having done so. It's actually quite wild. People share so much stuff with artificial intelligence, Elliott says. The following question and answer is from the article Work Friend from the New York Times of April 19th. This was written by Max Reed. The question posed is, my boss loves ChatGPT. Do I have to? Ever since my 40-year-old boss discovered ChatGPT, he is running everything through it, even asking it to write drafts and analyze documents. I'm going on 60, and I have spent my entire work life relying on my brain and bona fide resources to do my work. Now I'll write up a draft or something and I'll hear, "Okay, just run that through ChatGPT," or "Can you ask ChatGPT if XYZ?" I have explained that ChatGPT is not always correct and have literally pointed to specific examples. Also, I'll give him a draft of something that I wrote and he'll revise it by way of ChatGPT and ask me to review an often completely inappropriate, lengthy, off-point rendition. Help from Anonymous. The response by Max Reed. A tragic fact about bosses is that many of them have never built up a natural immune defense to stupid ideas. Because of this, a boss opening LinkedIn can be like a child attending daycare for the first time. An insufficiently immunized supervisor can send an entire business into a tailspin by merely glancing at a post consisting of single-sentence paragraphs. That is at least what I suspect is happening here. He's been so taken in by breathless columns, podcasts, and posts about artificial intelligence revolution that he is unable to distinguish between uses of AI that actually make sense for his business and counterproductive ones. Now you're obligated to play along. If you're lucky, this is going to pass as he begins to understand what AI is good for and what it's not. I'm not saying you should set your boss up for failure, but you might allow him to send out a few badly AI rewritten emails or attend a meeting with some hallucinated facts prepared and see what the result is. Embarrassment is a pretty good teacher. If that doesn't work and AI is in your workplace to stay, you may have to become an AI enthusiast yourself, after a fashion. From your description, it sounds as if your boss is more concerned with making sure you do use AI at all than he is in the specifics of how you do use it, which means that you're free to find the prompts and tools that make sense for the work you do. If he asks you to run a draft through ChatGPT, you don't need to tell him that your prompt was, "Proofread this and don't otherwise change it." Turn to AI as an ally, not an enemy. Your boss clearly won't listen to you or to do reason or to experience, but there is one voice that does command his respect. Have you ever tried feeding your boss's off-point AI written revisions of your draft back into ChatGPT, or better yet, a competitor model like Claude, and asking it to review the text based on your specifications for length and topic? Sophisticated models, especially at the better paid tiers, may not ever have the depth of experience that you do, but they're good enough to tell you when a draft is missing for its mark, if you explain what the mark is. This brings us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.